You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Eat first, think later is the mantra of many pets. This philosophy can send them to the emergency room faster than they can bark or meow. Sometimes the results are just an upset tummy or minor inconvenience, but it can also be deadly. Dr. Justine Lee, one of only 240 board-certified veterinary specialists worldwide in emergency medicine, are our guest today. We'll chat on ways that you can increase the safety profile of your home and yard. We'll also explore the pages of her two edutaining books, It's a Dog's Life, But It's Your Carpet, and It's a Cat's World, You Just Live in It. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
It's time for school for you and your friends, your furry best friends. Train your dog the fun and easy way with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Teacher's Pet host Pia Silvani teaches you step by step how to train your dog the fun and easy way. You get 8 30-minute live audio training sessions, complete transcripts of each session, plus a basic training manual to get you and your dog off to a great start. Training begins the moment you bring your dog home. Teacher's Pet Sessions offers positive reinforcement training to shape your dog's behavior and encourages upbeat, enthusiastic responses to ensure that your dog will enjoy learning. Teacher's Pet Sessions dog training is fun at both ends of the leash. So listen, learn, and laugh with your dog with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Get your copy of Teacher's Pet Sessions Volume 1 today. To order, go to teacherspetsessions.com.
Hi, this is Pia Silvani, your host. Bring your dog, tug toy, and treats, and get ready to have some fun.
teacherspetsessions.com.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's Oh Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. Oh Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, this is the place for a special paparazzi treat. Only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Lee, I love this. I love the titles of your books, and I'm really looking forward to chatting about that. But first, I think some of the serious things we need to cover is a little bit about emergency care. Now, tell us a little bit about the group that you're associated with, the Pet Poison Helpline.
Sure. Pet Poison Helpline is basically one of really two main animal poison controls in the United States. And we're actually located in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis. And we're a 24/7 animal poison control for either pet owners or actually for veterinarians also. So when veterinarians or vet techs or pet owners think that their animal has been potentially poisoned, we have the expertise to be able to help them and basically put their mind at ease when dealing with a potential emergency. So we can help them either decontaminate their dog, help induce vomiting. We can tell them what the product is, whether or not they need to be seen by their veterinarian, and then we counsel the veterinarian on how to treat that specific toxicity.
Is there a fee for the service? Because it sounds like it's extremely necessary.
Yes. You know, unfortunately, none of the animal poison controls are state or federally funded. All the human ones are. So, unfortunately, we do require a small per incident fee. It's a $35 per incident fee, and it's payable by credit card. And that fee basically covers the initial consultation, including as many follow-up calls to either the veterinarian or the pet owner. And we pride ourselves in that we're actually the most cost-effective animal poison control out there nowadays. We're $35 versus the ASPCA's $60. Per incident fee.
So if I have a pet that I think has become poisoned or there's something in the yard I'm not really too sure about, you said here there's a fee. You're very cost effective. Why can't I just call, you know, like 911 or call my human poison control number?
That's a great question. You know, I can say most human poison controls have actually moved away from helping animal owners. And the reason why is they don't have the medical expertise behind it. They don't know that lilies are toxic to cats. They don't know that grapes and raisins are poisonous to dogs. And so they may be giving out advice that may not be true to that species. So it's really important when you do have a toxicity to call a specific species-directed poison control. So for humans, they should be calling human poison control. For animals, they really should be calling an animal poison control. In fact, most human poison controls are actually directing you to call an animal poison control.
It sounds like it makes much more sense because you know what you're talking about instead of trying to extrapolate. We know for kids, aspirin. Boy, aspirin's not toxic to us unless you're very sensitive or high doses, but aspirin can be very toxic to our pets.
Exactly. And most pet owners don't know that. We provide a lot of free information at our website, www.petpoisonhelpline.com. And it's so important because about 50 to 60% of the phone calls that we get are actually human medications. So one of the most dangerous ones is actually Aleve or naproxen. Even just one pill can kill a large breed dog. So dogs are very, very sensitive to these over-the-counter medications. So when in doubt, it's really important to basically pet-proof your house.
That's a perfect segue. What are some of the most common calls that you get? What are the toxins besides Aleve that these pets are getting into? And is it accidental or are the people giving it to the pet?
Yeah, most of the time it's accidental ingestion. So the most common mistake that people make is they put the purse down and they leave the house and they don't think that their dog is actually going to chew into their purse, but they can get into all types of things. They can get into a little Advil container with lots of medication. They can get into prescription bottles that are in that purse, and they can get into sugar-free gums that contain xylitol that are really poisonous to dogs. So some of the top 10 or the top few phone calls that we get are typically, they're different between species. So for dogs, it's usually chocolate. It's usually mouse and rat poisons. It's usually xylitol. It's usually over-the-counter medications. And it's actually a lot of amphetamines or ADD medications, a lot of antidepressants. Cats are a little bit different. Cats are more discriminating, so they don't usually chew into a huge bottle of Advil or anything like that. But there are a lot of toxicities that can be very dangerous to cats. Cats have a really altered metabolism in their liver, so they can't handle certain medications. They can't metabolize them. So the top calls that we get for cats are actually lilies. Most lilies that people bring into the house from a bouquet at the supermarket are very deadly. Just one or two leaves or even the pollen from the lily can actually cause a cat to go into kidney failure. So we get a lot of calls about lilies. The second most common call that we get is when people put on a topical flea and tick medication that was designed for a dog and they put it on a cat. And that's very, very dangerous. It's so important to read the labels appropriately because you'll often see that products can't be used on cats. So cat flea products are very different from dog products. Cats are really sensitive and they can seizure if people put the wrong medication on.
Well, I just learned something new. I knew that lilies were toxic to cats, but I had no idea that just even the pollen could do this also.
Yeah, so, you know, it's something where I don't even advocate people bringing in bouquets to the household just in case their cat even brushes by and then grooms that pollen off of them.
Very scary. So, okay, I have kitties that I let outside when I'm there. I know there are certain house plants that can be toxic and certain yard plants. What are some of the more common ones that are out there that people wouldn't even think about? What are some of the scary things out in that yard for your pet?
Bernadine, that's such a great question. You know, I actually, when I bought my house about 6 years ago, I purposely dug up all the daylilies in the yard and moved them out of the yard. And my cats aren't even outdoors. But I was just concerned if one day they even escaped outside and they chew on a daylily outside, certain species of daylilies are poisonous. depending on what region you live in, some of the more poisonous plants are usually seen in warmer locations. So the most dangerous one that we see outside, besides lilies, are often Japanese yew and also oleander. And those are ones that can grow anywhere throughout the United States. Again, the oleander mostly grows in warmer locations, but you do have to be really careful. I'm usually an advocate that people are outside supervising their cat, either on a leash or anything like that, so they can make sure they're not ingesting anything poisonous.
I know I'm here in Southern California, and oleander is an extremely common plant because it is so drought tolerant. And several years ago, I had a client who brought in a kitty. They said, oh, it was outside, and I think it nibbled on oleander, but I'm not sure, oh, what to do. I said, well, I really think we should get this kitty to spit up. And they were vacillating back and forth whether or not to do it. And I got some information, found that just even a small amount of a leaf can be very toxic and deadly to a kitty. So we're able to induce vomiting, and blurp, there was that leaf. So
good.
The kitty was lucky.
Yeah, that's so good to hear that you can decontaminate them right away. That's why it's so important for pet owners to be informed on what their choices are. It's always important to call a veterinarian right away or even a pet poison helpline. And the main reason why is because the sooner we identify that a pet's been poisoned, the sooner we can treat it, the sooner we can decontaminate it, and it's actually less expensive if we can treat it right away.
And I am not the best gardener in the world. So oftentimes my plants have a tendency to die. But people want to get out there and have those gorgeous plants, and they'll use fertilizers and insecticides. What are some of the problems with, for instance, snail bait and slug bait?
That's a great question. You know, it's really important for people when they are putting down chemicals in their backyards to know what those toxins contain. I know in California, you guys seem to use a lot of snail and slug bait. And the problem with that is those granules are actually tasty to dogs. Most cats won't ingest them, but, you know, they're pellets or granular powder. And it's basically something called metaldehyde. And the problem with that toxicity is it doesn't take a lot, but it can cause pretty severe tremoring and hyperthermia. So dogs ingest it. They basically become hyperthermic with temperatures up to 105, 106, 107 just because they're tremoring so badly. So it's something where they need to be treated by a veterinarian immediately in order to prevent them from dying from it. There's other types of poisons out there too. So rat poisons, there's mole and gopher baits that are out there too, and that can be really dangerous. And most people think that they've put it in an area where their dog can't get into it, but you know, typical Labradors, their noses to the ground, they're more likely to get into anything. They have a really good sense of smell. So really important to make sure that it's in an area where pets can't get to it, or it's in a container that a dog or cat can't basically destroy.
Correct me if I'm wrong on the rat bait. Now, all of a sudden you have a rat that eats it or a mouse that eats the bait, and it's going through its little death throes someplace where your cat goes, oh, look, it's not running really fast. I can get this one. There's still the potential problem of the pet now ingesting that prey and becoming toxic itself, even though it did not directly eat the bait itself. Is that correct?
That is true. That's a great point. You know, when it comes to certain types of rat and mouse poison, it's really important because most people just assume that it's one certain type. And the most common type is something called a long-acting anticoagulant. It causes internal bleeding. So if a mouse dies from it, animals can actually be poisoned by just ingesting that mouse. And that's the number one cause of problems in raptors or in prey birds. So like red-tailed hawks or eagles, they can become poisoned by ingesting so many dead mice. The good thing is cats are actually really resistant to toxicity from ingesting mice. They have to eat a lot of, they almost have to have a full stomach full of mice before it's going to be a problem at all. So in general, it's not an issue for dogs and cats, but it's more of a problem for poisoning secondary wildlife like birds.
Good to know. And we were talking a little bit about snails, and last time I was at my garden supply store, I saw some snail baits. I said, much safer or safe around pets. I'm not sure if I believe that. Do you?
Well, it depends on what kind it is. And we always do advocate that people buy pet-friendly things, but you have to be careful. And when in doubt, you want to call a pet poison helpline, because we've seen some cases where people use, quote-unquote, pet-friendly products, so they may not have the chemical metaldehyde in it, but they may have mothballs instead, or the same chemical that's in mothballs. Well, people don't realize, or these companies don't realize, mothballs are really poisonous to dogs, too. So the active ingredient, even though they say it's more pet-friendly, isn't always pet-friendly. So you do have to be really careful and check with your veterinarian or read the label really carefully.
Or call you.
Exactly.
Having other types of plants outside, I mean, again, my brown thumb, one of the things that I am good at growing are going to be tomatoes. But I understand even tomato plants, and dogs sometimes will go out there and they'll start foraging. And as you're trying to grow these veggies, you go out going, look, all my tomatoes are gone. Green fried tomatoes is not what they're eating. But tomato plants can be toxic. Is that correct?
It is true, but I have to say, in general, it's not something I'm too worried about, because you have to eat an immense amount. It's more of a problem if large animals like horses or cows ingest a whole field of it. So in general, a dog eating just one small green tomato or even the plants from it doesn't usually cause too much of a problem. What the product is the poison is called tomatine, and so it can basically cause some vomiting, cause some weakness, and in general, the prognosis is pretty good. Even if your dog ingests a lot of green tomatoes or a lot of the leafy greens. So again, yes, it can be poisonous, but it's usually with massive ingestion. That's just like onions and garlic too. Most of the time, if your dog gets into your beef stew and there's some onions in there, that's not actually an issue. What is an issue is if a dog or cat chronically get into it. So you're putting garlic powder or you're putting onion powder on their food chronically. That's more of an issue. In fact, most dogs and cats have to ingest almost a pound per weight. So a pound per kilogram of the onions or the garlic before they become toxic from it.
That is a lot of onion and garlic. Now, people will sometimes use garlic because they think it's a natural way of having the animal be resistant to fleas. Any truth in that?
No truth to that, unfortunately. You know, a lot of people try garlic, they try brewer's yeast, they try vitamin C, but they are not proven to help with flea prevention at all. So when in doubt, we always recommend consulting your veterinarian about an appropriate, safe flea or tick medication instead.
And kind of going back to what you're talking about, flea medications, there are flea medications that are very safe on your dog, but can be toxic to your cat. Even if you don't apply it to the cat, but the cat comes in contact with that dog. So there are those dogs and cats that like each other, that snuggle up to each other. So I think it's always important for people to ask questions, especially the veterinarian, because you may go to the pet store and you're talking to somebody who doesn't have the expertise of a veterinarian and doesn't realize that there can be contraindications. And not all flea products are created equally. I'd love to have you chat a little bit about flea products and the newer ones out on the market and how they differ from the old-fashioned insecticides, if you don't feel
sure
against that.
You know, that's a great question that you bring up. The flea and tick market, it's a multi-billion dollar industry, and it's really important to read the label appropriately, and I always recommend that you check with your vet. And the main reason why is that depending on where you live, you may need to use a flea and tick product almost year-round. Here in Minnesota, you know, we really only need to use it for 5 months. But the reason why it's important is because some are safer than others in terms of dogs are more sensitive to certain types of products. Cats are more sensitive to certain types of products. And the most common type of product that's used in over-the-counter flea and tick medications are usually what we call pyrethrins. And pyrethrins sound scary. They're actually a chemical derivative from what's naturally in the chrysanthemum flower. So in general, very safe for dogs. And usually it's at a 44 to 50% concentration when you use it as a spot-on product. You put it on the top of your dog's back. The problem is cats, because of their altered liver metabolism, they can't break down that product at all. So you're right, but just even lying next to the dog and grooming it off or grooming it off themselves, they can actually become toxic from it and they can start seizuring and tremoring. So when in doubt, when it comes to a cat, I don't ever recommend using a high concentration pyrethrin. Okay, so there's different types that are out there. There's ones that directly are what we call adulticides. They kill the adult fleas and ticks. And there's ones that are sort of what I call birth control for fleas. And those are what we call insect growth regulators or insect growth inhibitors. And those are very, very safe. Now, they won't, if your cat or your dog has an overwhelming flea burden, they're not going to kill the adults. So a lot of times you still will need to use an adulticide. But the IGRs or the insect growth regulators are basically the safest because they're basically preventing the eggs from being able to hatch. So remember, one flea can result and produce 400 eggs. So that birth control mentality for flea control, I think, is one of the safest ways. And there's products like Program that basically contain that. And so I think that's one of the safest flea medications out there. When it comes to tick preventative, there aren't a lot of options. So you do have to talk to your vet and consult with your vet about what's the best option. If your dog's a hunting dog that's constantly in the woods and you happen to live in Connecticut or on the East Coast or in the Mississippi area in the north, central area, that's where we see a ton of Lyme disease, and you may need to use something like Frontline in combination with a preventic collar, a prescription collar, to be able to prevent ticks. So when in doubt, always consult your vet about that.
And one of the reasons I think people need to be so cautious also with a lot of these topical products, you may see, you know, go to your veterinarian and they say, okay, we recommend you use product X, maybe something like Frontline, and it costs X dollars. And then you go to the pet store, or here in California we have a lot of swap meets. You can find all sorts of things there. And you see a similar looking product. It has the same type of application system, this little drop and this little, say, it looks the same, and this is a lot less expensive. Ah, my veterinarian's just trying to rip me off. So you apply it and go, oh, now the pet's having a problem. The material gets absorbed through the skin. There's no way of getting it out. They're having a toxic reaction. Just because it looks the same doesn't mean it is the same. So you do need to be so careful.
That's a great point. And I always recommend people, when in doubt, look at the back of the box. Read the ingredients. Because a lot of times there's a 1-800 medical line that they can call. If they're worried that they put this product on and they think their dog is having an adverse reaction to it, always important to call. Or when in doubt, they can also call Pet Poison Helpline. The reason why is we can help you in helping get the product off. When in doubt, applying a mild dish detergent like Joy or Palmolive, if you think your dog's having a reaction, is the best way to get this oily substance off.
Great idea. And sometimes even these products that are very safe, that aren't getting absorbed into the body, your individual pet may have a reaction to it, a skin reaction, or they can be sometimes even a little lethargic under the weather for 24 hours or so. So when in doubt, look at the back of the box. Great idea, Dr. Lee, or call your veterinarian and get some input. I would love to talk on something a little bit more fun and exciting, your books, if you don't mind.
Sure. Thank you.
Good. That'll be the teaser. We'll take a short little break. We'll listen to the commercial. We'll come right on back with Dr. Justine Lee. She's going to tell us about It's a Dog's Life, but It's Your Carpet, and It's a Cat's World, but You Just Live in It. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Give your dog some thought with Dog Thoughts. It's the iPhone application that everyone's talking about.
What do you think of this? A man in Davis, California says he's invented an application for the iPhone that claims it can read your dog's mind. Huh? No, it's true. I read about it on my cat's Twitter page. That's fine.
Jay Leno talked about it, CBS reported on it, and now you can see what all the buzz is about. Created just for dog lovers, Dog Thoughts makes taking photos of your furry best friend more fun. Shake your dog and read his mind. On your iPhone, of course. Take a pic of your pup, shake your phone, and watch as his thoughts appear on the screen. Does he have a bone to pick with you, or is he having a tail-wagging day? Get your Dog Thoughts iPhone app today. Just 99 cents. Go to PetLifeRadioPromotions.com. That's PetLifeRadioPromotions.com.
Greetings, human? What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet Magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet Magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Passengers, please fasten your seatbelts, put your seatbacks and sleeping pets in their full upright position, and prepare for takeoff.
Pet Life Radio presents Travel Tales, the show where you'll get great travel ideas on perfect places for you and your pet. From Paris to paradise, south of the border to the South Seas, Travel Tales will give you cool tips on fun vacation destinations to travel with your pet, pet-friendly hotels, and advice on how to travel safely and happily with your furry best friends. So, get ready to pack the bags and the bones with your Travel Tales hosts, Susan Sims and Nicholas Veslowski, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
So Dr. Lee, we know all the things that our pets can get into and ways that we should help protect them. So what are other things that our pets are getting into, like getting onto your carpet? I love your books. How did you come up with the idea?
Thank you. Well, my dog book is called It's a Dog's Life, But It's Your Carpet. And my cat book is a sequel. It's a cat's world. You just live in it. And the reason why I decided to write these books, they're really humorous, fun, light reading in a question-answer format. And so really, you can pick up the book anywhere, just start reading in any section that you want. And the reason why I wrote these books was because when people find out I'm a veterinarian, either randomly at a party or randomly in the dog park, they instantly ask me all these random questions that they don't realize that they can ask their veterinarian. And the really important, I almost want to say trivia or old wives' tales, answering really important medical information that people are curious about. So questions like, do cats always land on their feet? Or can cats predict death or cancer? To things like, just because my dog's nose is cold, is that a good indicator of his health? I'm an emergency specialist, and whenever I'm in the emergency room, one of the first questions I hear is, well, I knew something was wrong because his nose felt off. And when it comes down to things like that, that doesn't actually correlate to your dog's overall health. So I wanted to be able to debunk some of these myths and be able to answer these questions and provide a lot of important, informative medical information at the same time.
It sounds like it is the perfect reading material for every pet owner. Okay, so let me ask you a couple of questions, ones that I get asked, and let's see if they're in your book.
Sure.
So, Doc, my pet ears seem warm. It must have a fever, or the opposite. The ears are cool, so it must not have a fever. Does that hold true?
It doesn't hold true, but, you know, that's something that I hear all the time. In fact, that's the first question in the dog book. Is your dog's nose an accurate indicator of his overall health? And the answer is no, unfortunately. Some people can feel, if they feel their dog's body temperature, like they put their hands on their head or their face or even on the belly, if your dog does have a fever, some people can pick that up. But in general, the nose is not an indicator. The ears could be, because if they're really, really shocky, if they have internal bleeding, they're not going to have a lot of good blood flow to the ears, so the ears will feel colder. Likewise, if they have a fever, the ears may feel a little warmer. So when it comes to the nose, no. No predictive value. The ears, sure. They could give you a better indicator.
All right. I like that one. Let's see. How about a kitty question? So you mentioned, do cats always land on their little 4 feet?
Great question. You know, I have one chapter called Curiosity Kill the Cat in my book, It's a Cat's World. And cats actually have an amazing writing reflex. So yes, they mostly land on their feet. If you throw them up in the air, which I never recommend doing, you'll see that they usually land on their feet. And it's because of this radon reflex and their ability to really spread out their arms and legs and be able to slow themselves down. They've actually shown that they've done studies where cats have accidentally fallen out of high-rise buildings. So in apartments in New York City, if the screen isn't on well, some cats out of curiosity will accidentally fall out of the windows. So it's really important to make sure that you have your screens on really tight. They have found that cats reach a terminal velocity at a very different velocity than humans. So they're actually able to survive really high falls. So again, I always am an advocate of preventative medicine, but cats are able to land on their feet.
So terminal velocity for them is that velocity at which they're not surviving the fall.
Well, terminal velocity is basically where by gravity they reach one velocity where they're not going to plummet and accelerate to the ground. And so it's something where they've done studies where cats, when they're dropped at stories of higher than six stories for a building, are able to still survive. And yes, they definitely come out with some traumatic injury, so they often have fractured jaws, they can break a leg, but they often survive. And so it's usually, in the studies that they've done, it's usually young 2-year-old male cats. So it's young male cats that unfortunately are the most curious and they're falling out windows. So when in doubt, pet-proof your house.
Amazing. Very sad to hear about, but knowing that they somehow survive more times than not is a testament to the way that these little kitties were made. Okay, so my cat likes to go ahead and it eats fruit. Is this abnormal?
It's not abnormal. You know, cats are actually carnivorous. And that's different from dogs that are omnivorous. They can eat either vegetable protein or they can eat meat protein. Cats are different in that they are only supposed to have quote-unquote meat source protein, so amino acids that come from animal source. And this is really important because I have one chapter in It's a Cat's World called Catkins Diet that talks just about nutrition. Some cats, for fun and also for a variety of reasons and different tastes and cravings for fiber, will actually crave some vegetables or plants. The important thing is knowing what's poisonous and what's not. Most cats don't beg for table scraps the way dogs do, but we have had some reported cases of grapes and raisins causing acute renal failure in cats too. It's more of a dog toxicity, but you do have to be careful. In general, if your cat wants to eat some vegetables, some fruit, just make sure you're picking ones that aren't poisonous like grapes and raisins.
And I've had cats, not my own, they seem to know that they're carnivores, who eat things like asparagus, cantaloupe, and I just shake my head going, well, if that's what these kitties want to eat, then okay. As you say,
exactly.
As they're eating their little wild mousies, that oftentimes they are going to have that grain material and the grass material inside. Okay, here's a doggy question. So I have a dog, and oftentimes male clients will say, I am not going to neuter it because if I neuter it, it's going to get fat.
That's a great question. You know, as veterinarians, we're usually huge advocates of reducing pet overpopulation. And so one of the main reasons why we recommend medically neutering a dog or a cat are to help prevent if that dog gets loose from him basically producing an unwanted litter. Right now, our shelters are so full of really unwanted animals. So we're hoping to minimize that by neutering our animals. And I would say most pet owners are that way. There are some studies that have shown that animals actually have huge health benefits from being spayed or neutered. So it reduces the chances of breast cancer in both dogs and cats. It reduces a really bad uterine infection, the uterus infection called a pyometra, in both dogs and cats. And it also helps reduce a lot of prostate problems. Dogs and cats are similar to humans in that when they get older, they can have a prostate problem that makes them urinate blood or have some medical problems. And you don't really want to neuter a dog when he's 12 because he's more of an anesthetic risk. So there's definitely health benefits from doing it when they're younger. That said, it's really important to know that when you neuter an animal, you decrease their metabolism. So they can't eat 6 cups of dog food a day. Now you have to wean them down to 4 cups. So you're right in that it doesn't change their personality per se, but it does decrease their metabolism. So just working with your veterinarian to find out the appropriate diet is the most important thing. And you can still keep your dog completely trim and fit on the appropriate caloric intake, even if they're neutered.
Sounds very good. You also had mentioned, you were talking a little bit right now about neutering your pet when it's older. I'll have clients that come in and say, well, I know, Doc, the teeth are terrible and they probably should get cleaned, but, you know, I had a friend who had a pet that was this age and it died under anesthesia, so I'm not going to put this pet under anesthesia because I know that's going to happen. And your retort to that?
Great question. You know, I always say age is not a disease. Just because you're old doesn't mean you're diseased, but you're right. It's usually older animals that have more metabolic problems. They may have more kidney problems or heart problems or lung problems. And so it is important to make sure that there's a healthy exam that's done and that blood work is done to make sure your animal can handle anesthesia well. And sometimes that even includes getting x-rays of their chest just to make sure their heart size looks okay and that their lungs look okay before you anesthetize them. The important thing is weighing the pros and cons. I am an advocate that even a 10-year-old miniature poodle or a 10-year-old greyhound that is older may still need anesthesia in order to help clean their teeth or do a dental prophylactic cleaning. And the reason why is it's better to do it at 10 instead of when the dog is 13 and at more risk. And you don't know if your dog's going to have some secondary side effects from really bad dental disease. We know that when dogs or cats have really bad dental disease, they're more predisposed to something called endocarditis. So that bacteria leaves the teeth, it goes into the gums, it basically goes into the bloodstream, and it causes a really bad infection on the heart valve. So we do know that underlying dental disease can cause problems when animals get older. I'm also a big advocate of doing preventative medicine. So if you end up anesthetizing your older dog or your older cat to do a dental cleaning, making sure to help minimize the incidence of having to anesthetize them again by brushing their teeth at home. And if you can brush their teeth even once a week, that helps dramatically decrease the amount of tartar that develops.
Well, I love your response because that's exactly what I've been telling my clients all along. I'll also say, you know, the teeth aren't going to get any better on their own, and
exactly.
Your pet's not going to get any younger. So let's do all the safeguards that we can. We know that anytime you put a pet under anesthesia, young, old, healthy, or sick, there's always a chance of an anesthetic complication. But anesthesia is so much safer than it's been in the past. We have so many safeguards, so many ways of monitoring their conditions while they're under anesthesia that even these little mature kids can still go under, and 99% of the time come out of it just fine.
Exactly. And I always recommend working with your veterinarian. A lot of veterinarians, especially for cats, will hospitalize that cat for half the day just to put them on IV fluids before they even undergo anesthesia, and that helps prevent a lot of problems too. So working with your veterinarian in terms of blood work and additional testing and some IV fluids to help make sure that that anesthesia is the safest way it can be.
All right. If you had to think of one of the craziest cat questions in your book being It's a Cat's World, You Just Live in It, what would that question be?
You know, this is a question that I was actually asked at 2 a.m. when someone called me. The question is, if I see a string hanging out of my cat's butt, should I pull it? And the answer is no. Unfortunately, cats...
What are you doing awake at 2 a.m? I wonder for this person.
I wasn't awake, but they called me on my cell phone. It was a family member. But cats are so curious. And so something as simple as tinsel on a Christmas tree or your sewing needle and thread can be extremely dangerous to cats because they want to play with it, they'll bat it around, and then they'll try to eat it and swallow it. And what happens is cats are predisposed, they're more likely to get something called a linear foreign body. So that string is a foreign body, gets stuck in their intestines, but that string can also wrap around the base of their tongue or it can get stuck right at the end of the stomach. And what happens is it sort of gets knotted up and balled up, and the rest of the intestines are basically still contracting, and it can cause a really severe perforation or a rupture of the intestines. So tinsel, string, yarn, ribbon, anything like that need to be removed from the house or make sure that they're put away so cats and dogs don't get into them. If you see a cat passing some tinsel or some Easter grass or some string, I generally don't recommend pulling because you could be pulling a bunch of intestines and actually perforate it. The same thing if you see a string out of a cat's mouth. The safest thing to do is to tape that string to the collar and then rush them to your vet and then let your vet remove it under sedation, because sometimes it does require surgery. You just don't want to cut it off and think that everything's okay, because you can actually make them much, much worse.
That actually happened to me, and I should say before I got into veterinary school, I was in college, and I noticed my cat pawing at its mouth, and it looked like there was some string. So I took it to my veterinarian, and he looked in the mouth, looked in the back of the tongue as far back as he could see, and says, "There's a needle back there, a sewing needle." Yes. And I said, "Stupid cat." And he goes, "No, stupid human. You're the one that left it out." It's like, yes, you're right. Thankfully, kitty under anesthesia. Able to remove it. The cat was fine. A little bit of a sore throat. But yes, they like to play with these things, and it can be quite deadly to them.
Yeah, that's such a good point. You know, it's so important to be able to make sure that your house is pet friendly. I give some hints in my dog book and in the cat book. In the dog book, I have one chapter just on training the four-legged beast. And it's something where when you have that 20-minute appointment, the first time you go in for your puppy vaccines, we vets don't always have time to go into all the intricacies of training. So I always say that my book, It's a Dog's Life, or the cat version, It's a Cat's World, is good for either the really experienced cat owner or the dog owner to even the new novice owner. And so it's important to make sure that, especially your dog, is adequately trained, making sure your dog is crate trained so he's not getting into things around the house, because there's a lot of household poisons that you can easily avoid him getting into if your dog is used to being crated. So really important to make sure your dog is well trained also.
And put away those things that it can get into. As I know, we have to wrap up right now, and I know there's all sorts of fun things that we can chat about, getting back to toxins, puppy-proofing, kitty-proofing your house. If you think your pet ever gets into something, and for instance, you may have some recreational pharmaceutical products around the house, marijuana. Working as an emergency doctor myself several years ago, people would bring in, and even in my daytime practice, people bring in a pet, and it just looks spacey. And yep. You ask questions, "Oh no, didn't get into anything." It's like, really? You can tell me, I don't care. And then they'll finally say, "Yeah, got into the marijuana cookies," yep, or "got into the marijuana." Bring whatever you think is toxic with you to the veterinarian. Bring the packaging with you. Don't be, you know, trying to save yourself. You need right now to save your pet. And most veterinarians are not going to care, are not going to call authorities. They want to help you save your pet's life.
Exactly, Bernadine. You bring up such a good point. You know, people are often, they beat around the bush in that extra 20 minutes it takes them to tell us that their pet got into something illegal. We're not going to report them to the DEA. We are looking out for the welfare of the animal. And so the faster we know that it's a toxicity, the faster we can treat it. And, you know, that brings up such a good point. Knowing that the majority of dogs and cats, they don't have the same sense that we do. A dog who's thirsty doesn't know that it's bad to drink alcohol. So I've seen some cases of alcohol poisoning from people leaving out beer or martinis on the table, and the dog is thirsty and they'll drink it. You know, dogs will drink really dirty water from a stream or a creek. So really important that pet owners be aware that whatever they have in their household can potentially be toxic. It's the dose that makes the poison. You know, there's so many things out there that are poisonous that people really have to pet-proof their house. It's really important to do that.
And just because you think, well, I'll just give a little bit, and that little bit is not going to hurt, it can still be toxic. So whenever you have questions, the best person to ask is always going to be your veterinarian. You can also call the Animal Poison Control. They can give you just some wonderful information. Dr. Justine Lee, where's, again, the site where people can go? They have questions about pet poisoning.
Yep, they can reach us at Pet Poison Helpline, and it's petpoisonhelpline.com, and we have a toll-free number that's 800-213-6680.
I'm Dr. Bernadine Cruz. We've been talking with Dr. Justine Lee, and she's been telling us ways to keep our pets healthy and safe, and also a little bit of fun information in her book, so really do look into that. Ever have questions about your pet? Best person to ask, your primary care veterinarian, or you can always email me at thepetdoctor@petliferadio.com. Please stay tuned. Listen to us again next week when we have more information on how to make you the best pet owner that you can be. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets. straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.